The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning. Today is Friday, the 29th of March. First quarter is already ripping and gone. Joining us this morning from Cal Poly Humboldt is Jen Capps. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. You ready for your monthly challenge?
Yes, I am.
All right. Oh, well, that's interesting. Have you heard the phrase Roman holiday?
Roman holiday.
I have not.
Maybe.
You want it or you want to pass and
do something else? Give me a chance because I'm, you know, maybe one for 100 on these.
Okay. Which culture began celebrating the new year with a feast of food and alcohol?
Which culture doesn't do that?
Yeah. No, it's first.
The China. Chinese New Year. That's all it makes me think of.
No. The earliest recorded New Year's festival was in ancient Babylon.
Okay.
In what is now Iraq. Before the introduction of the calendar year, the celebration took place in spring during the planting season. The Babylonian feast was elaborate, lasting 11 days, and including copious drinking and eating in a tribute to the gods of fertility and agriculture. Celebrating the new year was both a thanksgiving and a plea for a successful new harvest.
Huh. Well, that makes sense. It's always a good bet if you pick ancient that you go Rome or...
An 11-day Thanksgiving. Can you imagine what that means?
Yes, I can.
It doesn't sound
too bad.
The old turkeys are going to be running scared in the woods.
Sounds gluttonous.
Yes. Probably so. Throw in Dionysus and we're in trouble.
I guess
on so many levels, huh?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, or Bacchae. I guess Bacchae if you were coming from the other side.
Perhaps.
Whether Roman or Greek mythology.
You got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not big into mythology, huh?
Apparently not. No.
Oh, fair enough. So, what's exciting and new?
What's new?
You're into the registration season, right? And enrollment and applications and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, applications are strong. Our applications are about the same as they were last year, which is our first Cal Poly Humboldt year. And so we're about 21,000 applications. That was about the same as last year, which was a huge increase from the year before, which was about 13,000. So
that's bigger than Arcata.
It's a huge spike. Yeah. And our yield last year was pretty low. I think it's going to be higher this year based on a variety of factors. I think last year people caught attention to us and were interested in wondering what the Polytech was all about. And were checking us out and trying to figure us out.
What's the conversion rate for SLO or Pomona?
Well, very different. SLO is a campus that turns people away.
They're impacted,
right? Yeah, they turn people away. Them and San Diego State are the two within the CSU system. Obviously, SLO is a Polytech and San Diego State is not. But San Diego State is more of a research one. They're about to
achieve research. Oh, yeah, it's the research part. It has nothing to do with beaches.
Nothing. No.
Zero.
So those two are kind of the anomaly in the system. Pomona is a bigger campus. It's 24,000. It's a bigger area. But they have enrollment challenges too. Everybody has enrollment challenges now. I'll say we've had enrollment challenges for a long time, but this is the first time that enrollment sort of broadly.
Because of the offsite or Zoom education? Well, I don't know. There's a lot of factors. What they're called.
I mean, I think there's a lot of factors that are impacting enrollment. I think it's that the people essentially coming out of high school, there's less people. There's more competition for college-age students, and then the number of college-age students is lower.
I would think with the, if our area is any kind of a barometer of the state, there's a lot of recognition that, maybe going to a vocational school is a viable option where before those weren't thought of. Even if they're only taking 10% of a graduating class, that's 10%.
Yeah. There's all sorts of things, I think, that impact it. So because of that, then when the competition is more stiff, and then you have a lot of online programming. Arizona State University as well has really jumped into the California market. So they
really,
yeah. Michael Crow, the president of Arizona State, is a entrepreneur and has been has figured out, I think, the higher ed game in some ways. There's I think, pros and cons to that approach. But
so what's the attraction for Arizona State? I mean, if it's not curriculum-based.
Well, I think there...
What would be the linchpin that gets somebody to go to that school instead of go to a California school?
Well, there's a lot of online stuff, and a lot of online education works that is appealing to people sometimes is that it isn't... So imagine if you today were like, hey, you know, I think I'd like to get a degree in engineering, and some schools have figured out a way to say, great, you can start next week.
Oh, so it's an immediacy.
Yeah.
Also, okay.
A very quick turnaround. It isn't.
So they've broken the paradigm.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And how do you need to receive your education? Do you want it online? Do you want to come and be part of the campus experience? Like, and so broken it down into a different way versus having to have people come for semesters, quarters, have it sort of a little more antiquated, which is what most of us are doing. So a few campuses or a few universities have been successful in doing that, and it's works for them.
Are any of them public in California?
Public in California.
I mean, I could see private schools can do whatever they want.
No.
Okay, fine. But, you know, if Arizona is attacking California,
yeah,
I would think that somebody in Sacramento would be looking at this going, hey, wait a minute. If we're seeing leakage,
mm-hmm.
yeah, unless they're just not wired to it or burying their head in the sand.
No, I mean, I think it's definitely the alarm bells are sounding, I think, and in trying to figure out kind of pathways forward on that. I don't know a tremendous amount about sort of the rules that govern higher education in Arizona, but perhaps that's a little more flexible than some of the – and I actually don't know – like what accrediting body accredits Arizona State and all of that. So some of those things that are not that exciting to think about but have a really big impact on like how universities run and operate. And there are things I can and cannot do based on our accreditation, based on state law.
How big is accreditation?
How big?
I mean, not the machine, but...
Like how important is it?
Yeah, for an employer. Okay, if they got a, if there was a person A... who had a degree in whatever the subject matter was from an accredited and one from one that wasn't.
Hugely important.
That's a deal breaker.
It's hugely important, okay. But there's university accreditation and there's specialty accreditation. So to be continued, because that's an important one to dig into, I think.
Apparently we will.
All right.
When we come back, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps from Cal Poly Humboldt. Before the break, I stumbled into something about accreditation, whether or not it was a significant issue at post-education. So you've got whatever your degree is, at whatever level it is. You go to school A and you go to school B. Is it accredited or not? I would like to think that if somebody has their stuff together, that's what counts.
Yeah.
You know, but there are certain schools that have different reputations for excellence or just being a school. Is accreditation kind of in that same discussion?
Well, I'll break it down a little bit for you. There's university or college accreditation. So how a university or college as a whole is accredited. So you'll love this, an acronym WASC, so the Western Association of Colleges and Universities.
They do.
Commission or committee. No,
doesn't WASC do high schools also?
I don't think so. There's other, There's other ones, Higher Learning Commission, yeah. HLC.
I remember going through all that stuff at St. Bernard's.
Okay.
And it was like, it's a couple-year process of building up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They bring principals in from other areas, and they critique and make areas
same, of suggestion. Same kind of thing.
Same process. Yeah.
For public education, for us, if we're not accredited, then we are not eligible to distribute federal financial aid.
That's the linchpin.
So that's the thing. Like a university or a college can call themselves that, but then they cannot provide any financial aid or accept any resources to give any. So it all is like cash on the barrel kind of situation.
Pocketbook.
Correct.
Well, I would
think that
would, at some point, could have the opportunity to hold a university or institution of higher learning ransom.
Well,
you must do this or else. And the or else is big time money.
Well, that's true. But yes, that's true. I mean, that's the biggest stick, I suppose. But the other part of it is then the accrediting
motivator.
Correct. Okay. But then there is accountability to it. There should be, I believe, there should obviously be a framework about how higher education is delivered and some standards and who the person is standing in front of you teaching a class, like those basic things, right? I mean,
that all makes sense.
If it's not accredited, then...
Is that part of the accreditation
process? Yes. And to make sure that the university... There's also... Yeah, it's all of that stuff, that there's a structure, a foundation that we're held accountable to. So that's like the overall piece. And so that's why, you know... The feds and everybody else isn't going to give money to a university that doesn't adhere to some sort of broad standards. It makes sense, right?
Sure. You want to know that a degree at least means that they
exactly,
know something.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, so sometimes there's parts of it, I think, that can be frustrating and you want to be innovative and try something new. And sometimes, you know, making sure that you're in compliance with the accreditation standards and then being innovative sometimes don't go together. So you can imagine that.
Yeah, you can butt your head against a wall every once in a while.
Exactly. And then so that's like the overall university accreditor, but then academic degree programs can be specialty accredited by that area. So, for example, business is one. A lot of health programs, nursing.
So it's a higher standard, or
it's just
confirmation within that specialty that those specific teachers and those specific classes contain the information that need.
Nursing is always a good one to talk about because it's a pretty aviation aerospace too. I mean, aviation to be a pilot, like those types of things. But nursing is a good one because when you think about it, when a nurse is trained, there's course content in a class they need to learn, but they also have practical experiences and clinical experiences, and they have to do a surgical rotation, and they have to do like an emergency rotation, behavioral health, those types of things.
Get off campus for our scenario.
Exactly, and like have real world experiences.
Yeah.
But actually 95% of our academic degree programs have real world experiences actually. But but in this case, it's like you have to show how that you can draw blood successfully and like these different pieces and standards. So imagine like if a nurse went through a program that didn't require you to do those things, right? And then that's your nurse. Like you don't want that nurse.
Right.
Right. So like people who went through an air quote nursing program, but it wasn't an accredited one, it's worthless. Like because nobody will hire those folks because it has to have those pieces of standards. You can imagine a university accreditor isn't going to get that detailed, right?
We'll rely on whoever the medical facility is to, I would presume, review the individual and give thumbs up and say that
of course
good.
Of course, but they're going to want some assurance that the person who's coming in has those basic skills, right? And that they come from a program where they had to do these things kind of coming in. So, but not all academic degree programs are specialty accredited. So it just really depends. I mean, some things, a lot of programs, it doesn't need to be that specific. And then some might feel like they're being held down because they can't be as innovative if they have to adhere So they align themselves with like the professional organization or something, but it's not as specific with respect to having this extra layer of oversight, I guess.
What about the teachers themselves?
Yeah, the faculty?
Do they have, presuming that that's one and the same, yes.
Well, I was actually thinking of the School of Education that trains teachers.
In the classroom, the teacher.
Uh-huh.
Are they individually accredited also?
No.
Or subject to scrutiny?
The part of the tenure and promotion process is how they are evaluated.
Ah, well, we'll talk about that when
okay.
we come back.
Fun stuff.
We're on a roll. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps from Cal Poly Humboldt. Critiquing, we were talking before the break in the last segment about accreditation, and that it's critical for the graduate.
Yes.
It's critical for the employer in many applications.
Yes.
But it's fundamental for the institution. No accreditation, no money, no school. That's a pretty easy dots to connect on that one. And I had asked about the individual instructors, whether they're tenured or not tenured, or from the community or not, whatever. Is there a critique process or the equivalent of accreditation for individual teachers?
Such a timely question because it's sort of a hot issue, I feel like.
I pierced the bubble?
No, you didn't.
Of academia?
You didn't pierce the bubble.
I didn't get inside then. Okay.
So you may have heard of the term tenure track faculty or tenured faculty before.
I think tenure is pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. And what that means is that
immune from firing.
Okay.
Is the impression a lot of
no,
us have?
No, that's right. That's well.
Once you get there, okay, you got the retirement plan.
Okay.
And you really got to do something egregious.
Yeah, that's not too far off.
So
the normal tenure period, it's an interesting process. I went through it myself. I'm a tenured full professor myself, so I speak from the seat of going through the
Does
process
tenure
myself.
Mean 10 years?
It means six.
Oh, okay.
So the normal amount of time is faculty who are brought in on a tenure track a contract have a period of 6 years to demonstrate that excellence in teaching, scholarship, and service. And then depending on the discipline, so I'm psychology and criminal justice, sort of a blend of that, then it breaks down from there. So when you think about teaching, it's like, how are you in front of students? How do you develop curriculum? Are students learning? Those types of things.
So are those done with black and white measurements, or is that somebody popping in and kind of seeing, or maybe, you know, just before graduation?
No.
You sit down with the kids and you talk to them about what is their knowledge skill set?
So at the conclusion of every course, students provide feedback about their experience in the course. You can imagine that there's all kinds of things that impact how a student feels about the course. And if they learned anything, it could be that they had an awesome teacher and they learned a lot and all is good. It could be that they had an awesome teacher and they were horrible and didn't do their work and failed the class. It could be that a horrible teacher and had a horrible
everything. I would imagine there's a correlation between the grade and the comments.
You see, well, yeah. I mean, there's all...
Oftentimes.
There's so many confounding variables, right? So there's so many things that could impact it. But I will say they are valuable. You do get a theme and you do get some information. But that's not the only thing, right? So you do have a process where you have people come in and review the class and watch the class. But the faculty who is in that tenure track process has to submit a file, like a portfolio, every year. Here's what I did in the area of teaching, in the area of scholarship, and in the area of service. And then that's reviewed by several levels within the institution. And as the chief academic officer, I mean, myself and the president are sort of the highest level overview on that. But there's various levels.
So service is like community service or service within the discipline?
Or
service to the kids?
All of it. So service on, it could be committee work within the university, it could be to the discipline, it could be to the community.
So like joining Kiwanis.
It could be. I mean,
something as basic as that?
So I'll give you an example. So when I was faculty, I was on the curriculum committee. So I developed curriculum for the for my department. I also did curriculum development for the college that I was in. I sat on the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Council for the state of Colorado when I was in Colorado. So that was service to the state, I suppose, and the community and the discipline. There's no one way you have to do it. It kind of
just showing that you're engaged with
exactly.
the subject matter.
Yeah, and you're giving back. And then scholarship is, what are you producing? Are you doing presentations of scholarly, like, what's your research agenda? And so you're doing,
that's the papers.
Papers, presentations, grants, or the
oh,
big
funding
ones.
Machine.
Yeah, those pieces too.
Yeah.
So,
gee, yeah. I wonder on the pecking order which one's highest.
Right. Right. And so you have 6 years. So what's interesting about a tenure track position is you have 6 years to demonstrate. And each department has like a list of, this is all the stuff you have to do to meet that tenure.
Oh, so there is a list of reference.
There's a bar, and it's not,
and
it's not the same because not all disciplines, you can imagine if you're seeking tenure in the art department, that's going to look real different than in like wildlife, right? And it shouldn't be the same.
Yeah, if you're running around painting animals.
Right, that's not going to work so well.
Right.
But here's the thing. So most people go to, then, you know, you have this job security for life and it's really difficult to lose your job. And that is pretty true, sort of. But the thing people don't know is if you don't get tenure, you lose your job. That's it. You get
You're six and done?
Yeah. Often you get a one-year terminal year, like a year to kind of figure it out.
What if you don't want tenure?
So there are. So we have about, right now we have 57% what we call tenure density, but I aspire to 60% tenure track faculty. And then 40% of lecturers. So that can be full-time lecturers, not on the tenure track, or part-time faculty.
That's what I think. I've got buddies who are CPAs that have taught a night class.
Wonderful. There's such awesome contributions. And I did that also at other schools and stuff. Yeah, so that group is evaluated also, but they are not required to do scholarship and service. They can. They don't have to. They're only... requirement really is around the teaching part. And so they also get student evaluation feedback. They get observed sometimes.
Hey, you still want to make sure that the classroom quality is...
Correct, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So some people don't want to be on the tenure track. Certainly, like the people that you were speaking about, the part-time people that just want to teach a class and contribute, or those are such valuable people too because they have industry experience and they know often like kind of what's going on.
Current stuff and
mm-hmm.
giving back to
their
profession, their community.
Yeah. Sometimes where we get into a spot is we have people that end up being full-time lecturers or the full-time non-tenure track, and then it gets a little tricky because then they're doing the work of a full-time position, and sometimes it's like, well, how is that any different than the tenure track? Well,
because they don't want to play the game.
Some of them do, though. So,
yeah. I mean,
and,
if you're not, say, not that you would, but say, okay, I'm full time, but I'm not interested in tenure.
Yeah, there's
okay,
some.
Okay, fine. So I'll do a little here, do a little there, and you know, if everybody likes me, great. I'm I'm around.
Yeah.
You know, why would anybody be bent out about that, other than arguing that maybe I was taking the opportunity for somebody to have a full time tenured position.
Well, full-time tenure track positions pay more, that type of contract. And it's also going back to the point of once you get tenure, then you are pretty locked in. Your job security is pretty tight. With lecture positions, that isn't as much the case. It's a more flexible workforce. And this is not
and,
a
and more reactive to the marketplace.
Yes.
Oh.
That is very true. That is something that I think in rural communities I'm finding have a harder time wrapping their minds around that part. And I understand it to some extent, but there is intentionally supposed to be a flexible workforce in higher ed to be able to move up and down with the enrollment and with the market, as you say.
Sure.
But I think it's harder in rural areas to attract that talent and release that talent and bring it back when there isn't. You see what I mean?
Right. Yeah. If you're full time rather than you've got a business on the side.
Exactly. You
yeah.
got it.
Yeah. KINS, news and information time, it's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, news and information time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps. I just realized during the break, the show's turning 43 on Monday.
Oh, my goodness.
Whoa.
What do you do for a 43rd birthday?
I don't know.
Yeah?
Probably have a taco.
Okay. Well, it's as good a celebration as anything, yeah. right?
Exciting.
Okay.
Oh.
Wow.
So how are those infrastructure projects coming along? At the beginning of the year, it was the dorm. It was the building across the highway.
Yeah.
There was a couple of other things that were going on.
Yeah.
How's all that progressing?
Yeah, I mean, there's neat stuff in the works. The dorm, the old Craftsman project, there'll be a partial opening in fall of 25 and then full opening in spring of 26. So that's exciting. We watch it every day as it as it goes
up,
right?
Watch the crane swing around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Big stuff. But also, we had a neat thing happen. My goodness, it's now 2 weeks ago, through a partnership with the city of Arcata and Cal Poly Humboldt. We submitted for a Caltrans grant and were awarded one of three in the state. And the purpose of the grant is, it was called Reconnecting Communities. So it was the focus of the grant was to focus infrastructure projects on maybe old infrastructure projects, highways, railways, things that had happened that might have divided or cut parts of communities in half. And so
like when they dug down the highway.
Exactly, yeah. And then not recognizing perhaps the impact to communities. And so this is an effort by Caltrans to resource some different communities to be able to, they use the word reparation, but offer reparation to try to bring it back together again.
Do you feel that there is a separation?
I think there's, yes. I mean, so
the physicalness or a cultural one?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, I think this project in particular, so it would put, I use the word CAP, and sometimes it's hard for me to visualize even what that means, even though my last name is Capps, right? But when you think about Northtown, Arcata, and then the campus, and then there's that bridge that you can kind of go under and around, and some students find, actually, I find it a little bit sketchy sometimes. But what this would do is right over where, like, Leo was filming, right around that area.
Oh, first name basis.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
And it would put a cap and connect the two, Northtown and the campus, and then you could put something on top of it. So it's like 4 or 5 acres. You could
like cover tunnel.
Yeah, but you could put a park. You could put stores.
Well,
you
sure,
could put apartments.
Sure.
You could put, you know, fill in the blank. But the we were one. So that what was neat is we were the rural pick of the state. So South San Francisco was awarded one, and then San Diego was awarded one for different types of projects. But we were really highlighted for providing a grant to a rural community. And the purpose of this, these resources is to be able to study and do all the studies and stuff and to be able to set up then to potentially get some federal resources to to complete the project. So this is kind of a study portion of the project, but it's really neat to think about what you could do and how neat that space would be and connecting the two together. So I think it's symbolic too, because I feel really good about how the city of Arcata and the university have been working together, particularly in the last few years.
That's kind of my sense, is that there's been a lot more embracing of each other.
Yeah, it's nice.
Okay, that's cool, but that was the cultural element.
Uh-huh.
And the physical part, it's like, I don't think anybody, but maybe I'm wrong. Oh, when I went there, going into town, go down to the plot. Whatever it was is just...
Yeah.
Now, if you were talking about Sunny Bray, maybe that's a little bit because of the distance.
Yeah.
A quarter mile. Come on. Walk across the bridge. Drive across the bridge.
But it's, I think at
ride
night.
Ride a bike across the bridge.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think, though, at nighttime and even just in the daytime, sometimes there's students, and students feel unsafe. There's sort of areas that aren't as lit up very well, like little corners and things. I don't get nervous often. But that spot, just because there's these little cracks and crevices that are just, it's just not nice either. It feels strange, like you're walking a gauntlet to go to the other side.
Can
it's
I
weird.
Use my terminology? The walking wounded.
Yeah, yeah.
They are a factor.
Yeah,
And whether you're walking the plaza at nighttime or whether, there's just nobody around.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. And so
this would open that up.
You
wouldn't have corridors.
It would just,
spaces.
Yeah. And I think it would upscale that connection between the two. I think it's exciting to think about, too, because what you could put in there, whether it's green space, whether it's, shopping, it's neat. It's really neat to think about. So it was a big deal, and it was fun to be able to go to San Francisco to the Caltrans office and then meet with the Caltrans folks and the secretary for the Department of Transportation in California, and went with the mayor of Arcata, and that was a lot of fun. So it was a neat moment. So I think we'll continue to have nice moments with them.
But there's additional grant dollars that are required for this project to come to fruition in whatever form it.
Well, this is show us that you're serious, right, and do the work, and then the additional resources are possible.
Oh boy.
Yep.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
What are we? Oh, spring break. Easter break.
It's coming around.
Does the school get it?
We just had spring break.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
See everybody on Monday. This presentation of Talk Shop was recorded at a previous time for playback today.